Goody, goody, here it comes.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show.
You are interested in the unknown, the mysterious, the unexplainable. That is why you are here.
Oh my God, don't stop now!
With your hosts, Ryan, John, and Elaine.
Welcome to the Cinema Psycho Show, the madhouse for film freaks and film fans of all types. I'm your host, Brian Coddington, joined by my fellow co-hosts and filmmakers, John and Lane Woolscroft.
Top of the morning to y'all.
Top of the morning to you all. Yeah. Or...
Very excited.
Whenever you're listening to this, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
It could be nine at night.
Top of the evening. Bottom of the evening. Middle of the afternoon. I don't know. Does it change? I don't know.
I had a friend.
Time means nothing.
Yeah. I had a friend tell me one time that they fell asleep listening to me. And I was like, that is the greatest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah, John
in my life.
has never stopped glowing from that.
And I'm like, you need to fall asleep every night listening to my voice.
So creepy. Yeah. So creepy, this one.
Yeah. So we're on episode 178.
Yeah.
And this week, we actually have a special guest with us. We have a special guest. We have, and I'm going to try not to butcher this, because I tend to butcher last names. We have Jimmy Bischel. Did I get it right? Close?
Well, call me Mr. Butterfingers. Yes, you got that right.
Awesome.
I'm sorry. I love doing the Emo Phillips impersonation, and this is, and because I had to throw that in, because... we're going to be talking a movie with him today, aren't we?
Yes, we are. We are. Jamie, you are from Neotrash Video.
Yes, I am.
Is awesome to have you on. And we're going to be talking about a little movie that unfortunately got buried by a bunch of major films in 1989 called UHF.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I thought it was called Ultra High Frequency.
Oh. Or VHS.
Well, do take into consideration that in other parts of the world, they couldn't use UHF, and so they had to call it the Vidiot or the Vidiot from UHF. So,
wow.
That's correct, yeah.
Lots of facts.
That's interesting.
They more globally Weird Al.
I have been a student of Weird Al since 1983, and this movie is part of my gospel.
Excellent, awesome. Excellent.
Yeah, I grew up being a big Weird Al guy. Lane, you did not. Brian.
It wasn't marketed to me in any way.
I liked Weird Al. My wife does not.
I have no problem with Weird Al. I like that Yoda song. It's, you know.
Instead of Lola?
Lola, yeah.
Okay.
That's a good
one. Let me first off, am I allowed to swear on this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, fuck, yeah.
Okay, good. Yes. I don't want to sound too much like a star fucker, but
no.
I do want to say that Al is the most humble celebrity I have ever personally met.
Oh, really? That's awesome. He seems like he'd be a really nice guy.
I had the pleasure of meeting him after one of his concerts in Greensburg. And the place I was working for at the time, 80stees.com, they are still a t-shirt distributor in Mount Pleasant. Anyway, I had helped them to create a shirt that was based on the piano key shirt that Michael Jackson wears in the video for Beat It.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
and
nice.
knowing that Al wore a shirt similar to that in the Eat It video, I got that plus several other assorted shirts, and I gave them to him. And it was vindication whenever I was on the internet scouring the next day, and I saw him in a candid shot wearing my shirt.
That's awesome!
Oh, how nice! That's really awesome.
Cool. Yeah. Yeah, I was like, oh, that makes me so happy.
Yeah.
Because
you know he didn't throw him out the window on 95.
Yeah.
Yeah, now he kept him. Not only did he keep him, he's wearing him. That's pretty cool. Yeah.
That is really cool.
So, Jamie, do you want to tell us a little bit about Neo Trash Video before we actually dive into UHF? Because I think, you know, there's a lot of movie things happening in Pittsburgh. But I don't think that a lot of people know about all these little things that that happen. I know we're definitely one of them. I've heard about Neo Trash Video before because I think you guys do the movie nights a lot of times. But do you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Oh, yes. Neo Trash Video is a collective of film geeks here in the Steel City. What we do is we will do movie riffs. We will do video live streams. Whenever the quarantine is off, we do what is called a Bad Movie Bingo Monthly, which is at our home of the Smiling Moose in Southside, Pennsylvania. And what that is we will watch a movie ahead of time, figure out the tropes, the cliches, and note them in the course of the movie. And as they show up, we'll have all these different things plopped into bingo cards, and you get five in a row. You get yourself a $5 credit from the bar. So,
ooh,
that's awesome.
And
that's cool.
And various movies we've done. We will do anything from Troll 2 in the Room, classics like that. Mm-hmm. Christmas time, we'll pull out something like Elves or Santa with Muscles. Every October, we try to do something kind of rock and roll-ish. November for our annual Extra Life promotion, we'll do something that is video game inspired, and we just have a lot of fun just doing this. It's a labor of love, and that's one of the reasons why we do it.
How long has Neo Trash been going on?
Neo Trash is over 5 years old as of right now. We've been doing the Bad Movie. I think we have at least 55 items in our Bad Movie Bingo history. So that's that's at least 5 years.
Wow, that's impressive.
Or close to 5 years. I'm sorry,
Yeah, very cool.
I often lose track of when we started this podcast because we're nearly 200 episodes.
April of 2016.
Brian, thank you.
Hey, time keeps on slipping into the future, doesn't it, man?
It does. But that's awesome. That's cool. That's cool. As I said, unfortunately, when you have kids and like jobs and stuff, you don't get a chance to go out. But I keep seeing stuff for Neo Trash Video all the time. And it just looks like an awesome time. And
well, that and also we have the Neo Trash Facebook page, neotrash.video.com. I got that wrong. if it's Neo Trash Video on Facebook, and we're always putting up memes and other information. Every day we put up a different recommendation of something that we think that people should be paying attention to. Again, we like to aggregate as much media as we can, and try to put forward a good community.
Awesome. I don't think that people understand a lot of the work that goes into riffing a movie.
Can
you kind of speak a little bit to that? Like, what work goes into it? We've tried doing it. We did it with our Die Hard episode.
That was fun.
It was fun. But can you speak a little bit to the kind of the work that goes into it?
Oh, you have what our personal situation is with that is we'll have four or five different individuals watch the movie, write individual jokes, and then we'll aggregate all that together, figuring out the various timestamps and whatnot, and it's insane trying to figure out what jokes are going to fit where. Sometimes the jokes can be like spot on. Sometimes it could be a little obscure. Like one of my favorite jokes that I've used is actually in the movie Mutant Hunt, and it's just a picture of a skyline. By just the riff is a trauma team's release. And again, if you're in the know, you understand the joke.
Yeah,
it's.
I think that's just kind of goes with some of these bad movies is, you know, when you kind of go through the content, you're like, okay, well, this isn't in focus and that sort of thing. You do kind of tend to go for some of the inside jokes.
Oh, yes. And those who get the inside jokes are always the people you know are going to be going and looking for more of the inside jokes.
Yep. Yep, definitely.
That people want to scour. They want to be part of the little community of individuals who understand what we're grading at.
Awesome. Yeah. Speaking of inside jokes, this movie that we're looking at today is chock full of 80s tropes that honestly, if you didn't know any of these 80s films, like if I show this to my kids, they'd probably be like, well, I don't get it.
It's a Weird Al song made into a 97-minute movie.
Yes. You know? Yes. And this movie was released, as we kind of alluded to, in the summer of 89, which the summer of 89 was really only about Batman.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't say it was also The Last Crusade.
Not nearly as.
Friends and loyalists.
There was Naked Lunch.
I'm just telling you right now. It was fucking Batman.
I believe that it was kind of dropped in between Last Crusade, Lethal Weapon 2, I would believe was in there, and it was just a perfect storm of everything just going, just overshadowing this movie. And whenever Orion Pictures had tested this movie, it got incredible feedback. They got better feedback than what they got for RoboCop, and they were expecting this huge hit. And the zeitgeist just didn't allow for it.
I think if it would dropped in maybe in the spring or even in the fall, it probably would have been fine.
Like a March or September release, you know. But this is hot out.
Well, thankfully they didn't put it out in January.
Yeah,
yeah, right.
Well, the dumping ground of Hollywood. But yeah, I mean, this is like Al was like two records in. He was hot as fuck at this time in terms of
popularity. Actually, Al had released in 1986 his Polka Party album, and that was not as big of an album as people had expected. In fact, a lot of people consider it his first big disappointment, which, strangely enough, it's not a bad album. In fact, one of his strongest style parodies, "Dog Eat Dog," which is in the style of the Talking Heads, is a fan favorite. But Al was in a turning point, and his manager Jay Levy said, "Well, would you like to do a movie?" And he said, "Well, sure, why not?"
Yeah. I lost on Jeopardy myself off that album, but
you really are like a knowledgeable guy, John.
Do you really want me to tell you that was on in 3D?
Oh,
God. But yeah, it's, you know, and the weird thing is, I think it's because Polka Party was like one of the first times he didn't have a Michael Jackson spoof. So I think that like people, the casual fans kind of were turned off by that, you know, even though like, well, probably the hardcore fans were like, it's pretty good.
Well, the big parody on there was Living with a Hernia, which was the parody of James Brown's Living in America from Rocky IV, which in all actuality, that's a very strong video because he really works his ass off in that video. He does all the James Brown moves, and it should have been more appreciated for what it was.
Al doesn't phone it in.
No, he doesn't.
He's here for the win. Yeah.
Oh no! Al does not phone it in. I mean, that's one of the things that makes him seem so genuine is the fact that he is willing to go the extra mile to make sure that it's as strong of a product that he can offer. So
yeah, well, it's interesting because I, you know, with this movie with UHF, I saw it probably when I was like maybe 12. I don't know the exact age. And I think I was the right age for this movie. But in watching it back now, like some of it is like a hint grading as an adult. And like I kind of compare it to like a Saturday Night Live sketch that you love so very much. And then they kind of turn it into a 2-hour movie. And then the joke gets a little bit lost in that. And I wonder, was this MacGruber, you know?
I could kind of see that, John.
Yeah. What's that?
I could kind of see that. Yeah. I think we kind of talked about that when we were watching it.
Yeah. What do you think, Brian?
I mean, I can see that. For me, though, like, the big thing is just that if you... I view this movie as basically, like, if you took all of Al's parodies, okay, and you tried to mash them together in a way that makes sense, this is what you get. Honestly, the fact that this movie comes out in 1989 is perfect because it distills down all of the 80s garbage into a single film.
I was actually going to say a distillation of the decade.
Oh, yeah. Each. Yeah, that's it. I mean, you have everything in here. All of the MTV era stuff that, you know, people who remember MTV used to play music videos. Yeah, I know.
Is that so what that M stands for? Music?
But this basically just distills all that down.
Yeah, that actually mentioning MTV, that actually gives a good segue to justify the music video in the middle of the movie.
Do you want to speak to that?
Oh yes. Well, first off, we know that the music video is a combination of the Ballad of Jed Clampett, mm-hmm, and Money for Nothing by Dire Straits. That was not the original choice, though. Al originally wanted to do a parody of Let's Go Crazy by Prince, but knowing the Purple One's proclivity for not exactly having a sense of humor when it comes to Al, he said no. Mark Knopfler absolutely was tickled and said that, I'll let you do this, but I have to perform guitar on the song.
That's awesome.
which is some like really like power stroke kind of thing there. Like, I'm pretty sure people can play your notes, but all right, what you do you, you know?
You do you.
and from what I, from the knowledge that I've gained, Al's guitarist Jim West, who is absolutely fantastic, he can mimic anything. He had been learning everything note for note and just like Guitar Hero levels of perfect. And Mark Knopfler comes in, and because he's been playing this on the road for so many years, he's got a looser style to it. And Jim's like, oh my gosh, how am I supposed to follow this?
Right. That's cool. Very cool. So diving into the actual plot of this movie, it's fun.
Well, you know, in terms of the plot, I don't think I'm alone here. Like the little like bumpers and side like just work to me works so much more than the actual narrative itself. Like
agreed.
Gandhi 2 and like, you know, like that stuff's hilarious.
It's
like,
where the comedy lands the best, yeah. I think.
Like Spatula City, you know, like those.
Spatula City murdered me. I don't know why. Spatula it made City. Me laugh.
Well, because
so
who?
Hard.
It's one of those things like. Who needs this much? But yes, it's
just so funny. And like just for kids like getting excited about spatulas. Oh my god, that killed me.
I actually here's the thing. I'm kind of in the minority here. I actually like the main plot that runs through UHF.
Well, you know, it's one of those underdog stories.
Yeah.
And that's what is so appealing about it. Plus the main antagonist, Kevin McCarthy,
man,
is so damn fun in this movie.
RJ fucking Fleming.
He didn't just chew the scenery. He ate all of it, shit it out, and then ate his shit.
Or Fletcher. Yeah.
What an image.
Yeah.
Oh, I have been using lately an image of RJ Fletcher and just the quote that he says that says, some people just need to be put to sleep.
What? Oh my god, that's funny.
I'm sorry. I referred to, you know, I'm sorry. I didn't know that I was dealing with chicks and broads. Oh god.
I just the idea that that this character this man created is just so abhorrent and over the top. I mean, he should have a mustache and he should be twirling.
Yeah, I think that's the only thing missing is the mustache.
This is fun for actors, like, to just, they know, obviously, from reading the script and, like, you know, being told what the tone is, like, oh, you have as much fun with this as you want. Like, there's no such thing as over the top here, you know. Over the top is just correct for a movie like this.
Well, I think, honestly, like, if you don't know Kevin McCarthy's kind of history in film, I mean, the man was in Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like the original Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and was crazy in it. You know, so I think he already had one foot in with this. So it was really just, as you said, just like letting him go loose, and kind of match the zaniness of the film. I mean, if he was just kind of like some normal corporate asshole, you'd be like, okay, well, that's not it. But it's the fact that he is so amped to 11, and you know, saying things like some people just need to be put to sleep. It's like, Jesus Christ, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's like most of the characters in this movie are very silly and very zany. The one that, like, bothered me for a few reasons was Victoria Jackson.
Yeah, well, she's kind of terrible in it.
Oh, my.
Well, Victoria and Al were friends for quite a long time, which is why she was chosen, essentially, or at least that's what I would assume. But I think that as far as a romantic lead, she's not the strongest in my
opinion. No, she's not. She really isn't.
Not a very good actress, and apparently she's fucking batshit crazy.
Now
But in her defense, if it wasn't for her, we would not have Smells Like Nirvana, because she actually gave Kurt Cobain the phone with Al on the other end to ask for permission for the parody. So we got to give her just at least a little credit.
That's true. I'll give her
golf
give her
clap
credit.
To you, Victoria.
Golf clap.
She does get a point for that.
Yeah, and golf I think clap. It's like something that needs just a little sidebar. Weird Al, because this is parody, doesn't have to get permission from these artists, but like he won't do it if they don't give their blessing. Like,
it's true.
I think that's really cool.
You know, he could just do it. And, you know, whether they even like, no, you know, I don't want you to do it. And he'd be like, well, kiss my ass if he was more of a dick. But like he does get the blessing of each artist. You know, as we mentioned, like Prince said no and he didn't do it. He could have just done it anyways. But yep. he chooses to get the blessing of the artist, which I think is pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the things that actually has endeared him to so many artists over the years, the fact that he's not doing something that is blatantly offensive, unless it's I think about the only exception to the rule was he did kind of a scathing version of Achy Breaky Heart, but as a that he did say that the proceeds of that individual song would go directly to charity.
Well, interesting. It's a kind thing.
It's driving me insane.
Billy Ray Cyrus is kind of hot garbage, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
I don't forgive him what he did to Miley. Don't forgive
him. Or what he did to Little Nas X.
Oh, that's rough. So getting back to the film, we have, and the reason why we're kind of jumping all around is honestly because this movie jumps all around.
Exactly. It is literally the equivalent of taking your remote control in the very
really
late 80s
is.
And just going through the channels.
It really is. But it basically stars Al as George Newman, who's kind of a daydreamer who really doesn't do anything with his life. And he basically gets plopped in basically because of chance of owning a UHF television station that is kind of a backwoods station with no one really running it other than Fran Drescher and a alien man.
Yes, that.
Well, we don't know. That he's an alien.
Philo.
You know that it, and Philo originally was. They were hoping to get Joel Hodgson to play that, and Joel said no. And so who comes in? Of all people, Anthony Geary from General Hospital.
That's crazy.
And does a. I think Joel was trying to shy away from that at the time, and I think this was at the time that MST3K was in its in its infancy, in its just germinating in his mind. So,
but yeah, I mean, Philo is honestly one of the characters in this film that you're kind of like, what's his angle here? Like, what's his whole deal? Because he's like very much quiet like this, and just says things like, "Well, you know, I'm in my laboratory." And things like that.
Today we're going to like public access television station.
Teach you how to make plutonium.
I'm going to teach you
from locally sourced items.
Well, he's sustainable. But he kind of is an oddball in this film full of oddballs that sticks out the most, because you eventually do find out that he is in fact an alien.
And you know who did the. Who did the claymation for that, though?
Who?
The Kyoto Brothers.
No kidding.
Yeah, they did Large Marge from Pee-wee's Big Adventure. They did the Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
That's awesome. I mean, it did kind of feel very much like a Large Marge thing. So I did kind of get a little flashback to that. But that's interesting. Pretty cool. So, yeah, we find out that this station really is doing nothing. And George decides he wants to meet with, as we mentioned, R.J. Fletcher, the greatest TV villain you could possibly
Channel
get.
8?
Is it yeah, Channel 8.
And the meeting between him and R.J. is just by chance because something that was supposed to go to Channel 8 came to U-62 accidentally. And it's a deus ex machina in order to move the plot along and introduce the protagonist to the antagonist.
Yeah.
And do you guys remember the day when, like, channels were known by the number on the dial? Like, put on channel 3 or put on channel
4. I mean, to be fair, I still say put on channel 11.
And I remember the idea of UHF station, because we had WPTT channel 22 here in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and WPGH channel 53 here in Pittsburgh. And so the UHF station that is here is showing a lot of reruns and just off-brand type of items. And that's exactly what a UHF station in the 80s was doing.
Yep.
It wasn't creating new programming. It wasn't, unless it's like, hello, I am here to talk about the community.
I mean, we still have that.
The Lemon Bar Bake Sale will be going on Saturday.
Yeah. But, I remember the UHF channels just because they were always buried deep in your channel lineup, and you would just pop it on, you'd just be like, what the fuck is this?
And you'd also try to see if there's other UHF stations that you could find mm-hmm. accidentally. It's like, oh, wait, Channel 66 from Cleveland?
How did that happen?
How am I able to get this? It's got a lot of snow on it, but I mean, like, I'm going to try this out.
Yeah.
Ooh, Tales from the Dark Side.
Yep, that's exactly right. So, you know, George and RJ have their meeting, and it doesn't go very well. RJ literally thinks that he's a real competitor until he finds out, oh, you're a UHF channel, and kind of laughs him out of the room. You know, and George and his partner, Bob, which honestly, I don't really care for Bob in this movie. I really kind of find him kind of annoying.
Bob's there because they needed somebody else to have
one. Yeah, he needed to have a conversation with someone. He can't have a conversation with Victoria Jackson. So that's why Bob's there.
Which is a shame, because
they should have just Nutty Professored this. They should have just like had like Weird Al playing like another guy. Like,
oh, that'd have been hilarious.
Yeah.
And it, obviously things aren't going his way. Nobody cares about the station. Yeah.
One thing that you kind of glossed over, though, is that before the meeting in the UHF station, mm-hmm. RJ fires his janitor.
Oh, yeah. Stanley Spadowski.
Yes.
Free N-word Michael Richards.
Yes.
Seinfeld Michael Richards.
Yeah, really.
But the only reason, one of the reasons why Michael Richards was taken in is because Al was familiar with his work courtesy of the TV show Fridays. And he was always Michael Richards was always doing off the wall, oddball characters on that show. So this is kind of a kind of in his wheelhouse anyway.
I believe Michael Richards was the actor who got in a fight with Andy Kaufman.
Andy Kaufman. Yeah, well, he's the one that brought the cue cards over and dumped them on the table. Yeah, when Andy Kaufman was doing his like his shtick.
His Friday shtick.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was him in that, yeah. That infamous situation. But
and
yeah,
Michael part Richards, of me wants to say that Larry David was in that scene too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is before Larry David was a writer
on
SNL.
You can cut that thought if you want.
Yeah.
But yeah, Michael Richards, like, I mean, not a crazy about him as a human being, but like he steals the show in this. You know, he's so good. Like, he's such a gifted, like, physical comedian.
And I say that as not a huge fan of Seinfeld. That is to say, not a fan of Seinfeld at all, but he is.
Yeah, hot take.
Why would you say that?
I don't. I don't.
My wife doesn't like Seinfeld either, so I kind of. Now, we both love Curb Your Enthusiasm, though.
I do. Yeah, I do, too. Like, and it's weird because some people are like, why do you like Curb Your Enthusiasm but not Seinfeld? It's just another Seinfeld. I'm like, I don't know. I don't have answers for you.
Here's the thing. It is different. There are differences between it. I mean, it's not a show about nothing, though. That's the key there is it's just a show about this character, Larry David, and how he's a fucking asshole. That's literally the show is much has how much of a how much of an asshole is Larry David, and then the best part is Larry David in interviews says, you know, I'm not that guy.
Yeah, but Al brings on Michael Richards as, you know, as his janitor, but and then when Al basically hits rock bottom, he gives this kid show that he's hosting,
Uncle Nutsy's Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Yes.
To Michael Richards, he's like, what do I have to lose? Like, I don't give a shit. And
exactly. And,
like,
and that's one of the beauty things about it is that it's the idea of reinvention. Mm-hmm. You get to a point where you're just like, oh, I can't do this anymore. What else is there to do? And there is that spark of reinvention, and it just absolutely goes wild.
Yeah.
And this becomes like what the biggest show on TV, you know?
Yeah, like it's just the kids are super engaged. Like you see, like the audience grows bigger, their set grows bigger, like every week. Like it's cool.
To drink from the fire hose.
I was gonna say that. God damn it!
Which, if you don't mind me throwing in a little other, you were talking about in jokes earlier.
Yeah.
The child that the name of the child that is. That gets to drink from the fire hose, Joel Miller. Joel is actually the name of one of Al's oldest friends.
Wow.
Oh, that's cool.
That's a little Easter egg in there. Yeah, if you know, don't look for
it. That's really cool.
Awesome. Yeah. In fact, Joel actually goes back to Al's college days and would play bongos with him in coffee shops while Al would play accordion.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Wow, that's awesome. But
and well, speaking about other friends of Al that go way back, there is the there is also a cameo by Dr. Demento in one of those Uncle Nutsy's club, sorry, Stanley Spadowski Clubhouse scenes.
Oh yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, Dr. Demento. For those that don't know, that's where Al got his break. He was he had a radio show, and Al came on and did his parodies there originally, and that's kind of where it kind of got him on the map,
cool.
His record deals and things like that.
I didn't know.
Yeah,
but yeah, obviously the success of this show and the high ratings run afoul of Channel 8. They are not happy about this.
Super grumpy about it. Yeah.
Well, it's not only that, but as you mentioned, Jamie, this kind of forces George to start getting a lot of his weird friends that we meet, like what's his face, Cooney.
Yes,
Cooney's involved, and he kind of does his whole stupid
Donger.
Well,
what was that?
Donger.
Yeah, that's Getty Watanabe, who was also if we want to go locally, he was also in the movie Gung Ho that was filmed here in Pittsburgh.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
That's cool.
But he gets all these weird oddball people that are already in George's life, and they start creating their own shows, and they all blow up.
And the only one that isn't explained, though, is Raul of Raul's Wild Kingdom.
Oh yeah, throwing dogs out of his window. Like,
but that was let me give you a little background on Raoul, though.
Yeah, definitely.
Raoul was performed by the late Trinidad Silva. The reason why his character didn't get a chance to get explained more is because originally it was going to be that Raoul was the mailman who brought the mail to U-62 and mm-hmm. accidentally dropped off the package that had to go to Channel 8. That never got filmed because while in Oklahoma, Trinidad got hit by a drunk driver.
Oh, shit.
And died.
That's awful. Okay.
Oh, man.
Awful.
And everything that was filmed with Raoul was put as much of it was put into the movie as possible, but that's the reason why you never really get a chance to know more about Raoul. Why they had to change it to I thought you hired this guy.
Wow.
And that actually kind of justifies the whole well why not type of idea in this movie.
Basically, Raoul was just the original Joe Exotic.
He was
animals that he's not supposed to have and that he mistreats for profit and gain.
And of course, you know that turtles have this hard shell, but not many people know this, but the turtle is nature's such a suction shop. Watch us. It sticks.
Yeah. But he creates these really zany shows that are blowing the shit out of Channel 62, and go ahead.
Well, I think and some of the quick show ideas they have are just like so brilliantly stupid, like celebrity mud wrestling.
Yes,
and strip solitaire.
Strip solitaire.
Yeah. So you know, it leads to you know the way that Al got this station was from his shady uncle to begin with. And the shady uncle has mob ties, and the mob needs $75,000 from him. So the uncle behind Weird Al's back, he sells the station to Channel, or he's going to sell the station to Channel right. 8, unless Al himself can come up with $75,000. So as you do when you got a TV station, you run yourself a telethon.
Right? That's perfect.
Absolutely. You got to do that.
To try to keep it alive. And, you know, and obviously they got to keep Michael Richards out in front because, you know, Stanley's show is the bee's knees.
But that kind of puts a target on their backs because, you know, RJ and Channel 62 decide to kidnap Stanley so that he cannot be on the telethon.
Because they don't like being number two.
No, they don't. No, they don't.
The ratings come out.
Who does number two work for?
You show that turd who's boss.
Just bite your lip and let it rip. We're going to get through this.
Somewhere out there, somebody's not seen Austin Powers. I'm like, what the fuck are they talking about?
Like, what's happening?
Tom Arnold's best role.
Yes.
Absolutely.
I was about to just say that same thing.
Question.
As a Texan.
Yeah, at least that's better than the movie where Tom Arnold played a prison rapist.
Yeah.
That's probably much closer to who he really is than the
Or the Stupids. The Stupids is pretty bad.
Stupids is unacceptable. Yeah.
Directly John Landis, why? Yeah. John Landis, why?
Yeah.
What happened to you, John Landis?
I mean, besides killing Vic Morrow?
Oh, yeah, I was going to say, yeah. Go back to making movies where you murder people.
Wow. Anyway.
Anyway.
Actually, since we mentioned Twilight Zone, the movie, let's just do a quick aside to the wonderful work that Kevin McCarthy did in that movie, too.
Yes.
Because he did the quick little show in the Joe Dante.
He was grandpa.
Yeah. And incidentally, if I thought right, did he have the same haircut as he did in Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
That
would be a cool nod, but
probably. I don't think he's ever really changed his hairstyle.
He's always had that kind of stringy hair, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's always kind of had it
Kevin's
slicked like
IMDb
that.
IMDb page, like I think his like acting role section is just the infinity symbol. Like, so many movies.
Good one, dude.
Yeah. So anyway, Stanley gets kidnapped, and George decides to go rescue him, and he does it in the most awesomely 80s bad way, in that he imagines himself as fucking Rambo. And he's got this bodysuit on.
Yeah, it's so weird.
There's so much KY jelly on that thing.
So let me tell you.
Oh, you got some insider info on this one?
The bodysuit, if I am correct, was created by Kevin Yeager.
Oh, of course it was. Of course it was Kevin Yeager. Always the KY with Kevin.
Because I know that Kevin Yeager also did the... he also did the bodysuit for the Fat video.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Makes sense. Weird Al goes and has to rescue Stanley. And Brian, I agree. This is one of the better side parodies.
Yeah, it works.
Especially when Weird Al is like blowing up the Eiffel Tower.
Well, or he's like just shooting everyone, and he's got like a pile of bullets all around him.
See, I love that joke when the guy is 2 feet away from him and can't hit him with the machine gun. Because like, how many times are you watching one of these action movies? Like, how are they missing? You know, like it's ridiculous. So good on you, Al. That's a good little farcicalness there.
Okay, I have to go back and change my earlier comment.
Okay,
it wasn't Kevin Yeager; it was Douglas White, who also did work on Return of the Living Dead.
Okay, that's all right. That's cool.
I'm so sorry. I was just so in with the whole fat suit idea.
That's cool. We'll keep it in.
You're keeping the actuallys out of our comment section. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get that. I mean, we got a negative review already. So from a couple episodes back. So you're good. You're good. Yeah. They only criticized our politics. They didn't criticize. Well, they did say we didn't know anything, but they didn't tell us what we didn't know.
And as the great philosophers Operation Ivy once said, all I know is that I don't know. All I know is that I don't know nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. But apparently we don't know anything about movies. And
it's
all good. Whatever.
Of course you don't know anything about movies. You're psychos.
That's right. That's right. So that's terrifying. So
you're welcome.
Thank you. So getting back to the film,
is there any place that we can get back into the movie? We're off the rails and then
mean, that's fine. This happens. We did Velocipaster earlier, and we were off the rails about 1,000 times during that episode. It just kind of comes with the territory. So getting back to the film here.
Velocipaster, my current favorite Easter movie.
Really? Why Easter?
I mean, it's got religious undertones and dinosaurs, so you've obviously got eggs.
Yeah. I mean, that would have been interesting to see rather than the giant, dinosaur costume at the end is him like shitting out an egg. But anyway,
open the door, get on the floor. Everybody walk the dinosaur.
but without Stanley, the telethon isn't doing so well.
No, it's not.
No Stanley, no. Yeah, me, you've got the
Kipper kids. You've got other assorted strange variety acts, and it's not doing as what you expect. Before we forget, we have to bring back somebody in the earlier part of the movie that nobody was really paying attention to. Change. You got change.
Oh, yeah, that guy.
The maybe homeless guy. It's not clear.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But here's a little interesting thing about that character. Before they got that really fun character actor who I've seen a billion things. I can't remember his name, but he's just got that face that is just so recognizable. The person who wanted to play that part was Ginger Baker, the drummer for the band Cream.
Really?
He was trying to break into in acting at the time, and he said, this is an interesting part for me to try.
Apparently, the actor who played the bum was Vance DeBar Colving yeah. Jr.
Okay.
And yeah,
He was actually here's the thing. He was actually the first to play Bozo the Clown on TV.
How about that?
Well, there you go.
There you go. Yeah.
Now you know. It's like that NBC thing. Do.
Yeah. Also, another casting that never happened was Crispin Glover was asked to make an appearance.
Really?
And
that was
Crispin, the character that Crispin wanted to play, that I was like, you're too big of a person to play this. He wanted to play Crazy Ernie, the car dealer, the guy who eventually clubs a seal.
Wow. Oh, yeah. Why wouldn't you want to? He wanted to play him, but not anyone else.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I can definitely see Crispin Glover as Crazy Ernie.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely, but
yeah. So, as you were mentioning that, like the homeless guy asked the Channel 8 and the antagonist of the movie for some spare change, and he gets a coin that ends up being worth $2,000. And wouldn't you know it,
that's the amount they need.
Telethon, they're $2,000 short, and everything seems lost. But then he brings in the $2,000, and they're able to save the station. And by the way, when you call into a telebot, you don't get the money right away. But you know, I guess this is UHF, a Weird Al, so like, let's just have him have bags of cash that he can give to the mob boss right away. Why not? The day is saved, and like, you know, it's weird because I feel like everybody kind of had like a character like payoff. Like there's and I'm so sorry. I is it Little Person? Is that
nomenclature? Oh, Billy Barty.
Yeah.
I think as
Noodles McIntosh.
But he gets knocked down earlier, and then like, but that gets paid off because he gets the last word on you know, those guys, and like, so everybody has
and thing, except, and Fran Drescher's character Pamela Finkelstein gets a chance.
She's lovely
to,
in this, by the way.
She gets a chance to do the news, do a proper news report like she's been wanting to do.
I was just about to say, I don't know. I don't think Fran got enough of the payoff there. And it's weird because she disappears in the second act of this movie. And then Lane and I were rewatching this in preparation for the episode. And when she came, I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot she was in this movie.
Well,
yeah,
she's been gone
for like 45 minutes.
Honestly, yeah. I think that's a criticism of this film is that I think there are too many characters to really like lock yourself on with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you've got your main characters like George and Bob to some degree and RJ and Stanley Spadowski. But there's like so many of these characters that Al's brought in that are equally as large. Like I would say Noodles and Fran Drescher. I mean they're all big characters. Even the bum, as we said, who ends up being kind of a big kind of saving grace at the end of this movie. They're all larger than life, and I think they all kind of chew up the scenery way too much to really kind of focus on one or two of them.
Though I will say, I think that the third act is better in this film than a lot of other films. Like the third act can kind of fall apart. And
yeah.
I think we got enough payoff in a lot of these characters that the third act was really satisfying when sometimes that's not the case.
Definitely.
Yeah, some of the characters that you didn't expect to get the comeuppance, like R.J. Fletcher's son, who was portrayed by John Paragon. If you don't know the name, that is Jombie, the genie from Pee-wee's Big.
Yeah, you're
Pee-wee's
right.
Playhouse.
Jombie.
If you always wanted to see a villain get his comeuppance and you didn't feel it was satisfying enough, like this guy, our main villain here, gets like 8 or 9 comeuppance in a row.
He does.
He gets kicked in the balls. He realizes that he gave away a $2,000 coin. He loses like all his money and pride. Like I thought, like a bird would poop on his head.
And he gets arrested. His station loses its license. Because of an op-ed that he had done on air,
yep,
and
it seems to be raining shit on R.J. Fletcher.
Well, what's weird about this movie, you know, so we kind of come full circle on it. It's funny that this movie mocks so many cliches when, like, this movie, its main premise is very cliched.
Yes,
like, it's kind of like having your cake and eating it too. I don't know.
Well, that's actually one of the beautiful things about it is that it is able to walk that line of it is cliche, and yet it can make fun of the cliches.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I just think it's a shame that this movie came out at the time it did.
Brian, do you think that's why like this movie failed? Because I have a few theories on this.
So my theory is that played a large part of it. I mean, I think that if this movie came out a year before, it probably would have been fine. I just think that when you are up against Batman, Lethal Weapon 2, and Naked Lunch, of course, and Indiana Jones, that any audience that you would potentially get, that's where they're going to spend their money on. Like, there's just not enough audience to give to a comedy. And I guess they probably were banking on, well, there's not any other comedies really going out. So maybe we'll get some of that, the people who go that. But at the same time, like, I don't think anyone knew that Batman was going to be as huge as it ended up being. So I tend to think that if this movie came out either before Batman or even later in the year, that it would have done much better. But I just don't think that there were enough people to really, get this movie going.
Well, that's the wonderful thing about VHS in the late 80s, mm-hmm. early 90s, is that it was the breeding ground for a cult following for this
Definitely.
Movie. It was able to pull the audience it deserved and make people realize, this movie didn't work right in the theater, but it works better on a small screen.
Well, I think I remember watching this on TV. Like, it would play on TV, like on Sunday afternoon, on TBS or even I think it played once or twice on HBO a couple times. But the point is this, that the trying to compete in a theater setting can be rough. For a movie like this, this movie is 100% original, in its approach, with basically mashing up all of these 80s tropes into one film. And it's actually kind of funny because I think this movie kind of paved the way for a lot of the parody films that we got towards like the early 2000s,
Scary Movie?
Yes,
and all that.
Scary Movie. Yeah.
I mean, if
and those teen films.
Honestly, if it wasn't for this movie or the work of the the Zucker brothers and Jim Abrams, mm-hmm. or those type of things, I was going to say Kentucky Fried Movie, but that was Zucker's.
I was going to say, yeah, this movie very much reminded me of that. I think that movie kind of paved the way for UHF because it's Kentucky Fried Movie doesn't have a main thread in it.
Right.
Like in terms of plot, but it's like all the little cutaways that UHF has. Did remind me very much of the work that they put into that.
Then I should probably say, unsurprisingly, then Alice made it is the only person. Is one of the only few people who has made an appearance in all three Naked Gun movies.
Really?
Yeah, he plays as himself in Naked Gun 1, Naked Gun 3, but he actually plays a character in Naked Gun 2, where he's a gunman trying to hold up the police station and then just gets hit by a door.
as you do in a Naked Gun.
And he also did the opening song for Spy Hard.
Yes, I forgot about that. Which, incidentally, that is an incredible title sequence. It is a pitch perfect parody of any of those Bond title sequences.
Yeah. Ryan, you pick Spy Hard, not Johnny Dangerously?
Come on. I love Johnny Dangerously, but yes, he did Johnny Dangerously.
There is no... Okay, I'm going to rip your fargan cork off and put it down your fargan throat. Good. Okay,
kill him until he's dead.
Take out that fargan wall and that fargan wall and that fargan wall. Not only was he destroying people, but he was also destroying the English language.
My mother used to hit me once. Once.
Joe Piscopo's best acting job.
Sidekicks.
Okay. I forgot his voice acting on the Cowboys of Moo Mesa.
Oh, man.
But yeah, I would say that I think that a lot of people love Al in small doses, like his songs or one of his music videos. I wonder if people were turned off by the idea of a 97-minute Al trip.
And that being said, I did think this movie was a little long.
Yeah. It's only 97 minutes, so that doesn't speak well to it if you thought that was a long
time. It doesn't feel 97 minutes. It feels much longer.
It does. Yeah. It does. Like I said, even though I do think the third act is more successful than a lot of other films, it feels long.
Definitely.
But yeah, but Brian, I would agree with you. I think the main thing is that, like, when, you know, I mean, movies were a lot cheaper back then, but you also have to understand inflation. Like, when you only got so much money to put in the movies, like, well, I got to go see Batman. I saw the first Lethal Weapon. I want to see that, too. And I heard this is the last Indiana Jones movie ever.
No.
You know, and so, like, well, I don't have any money left for UHF. Or Nightmare on Elm Street 5.
I think even back then, the mindset was like, well, what is going to be the best screen experience? I mean, I don't think people were necessarily, obviously, in the mindset of like, oh, well, I'll just catch it at Blockbuster, because that wasn't really a thing. Like, what we think now, like, oh, well, this will be a good Redbox movie. But I think people were really still looking at the cinema experience. And, I mean, there's no comparison. Like, you see something like Batman on the big screen as compared to something like this, yeah, where you don't need the cinema.
Yeah, right.
Even if they weren't thinking, like, oh, well, I'll just catch it on the small screen, you know, like, that wasn't as prevalent back then. They still were thinking of the cinema experience.
This movie more than made its money back in terms of, like, rental. Like, you know,
right.
The old chestnut, like, it became a cult hit. Like, right. You know, a lot of people rented the movie after.
Definitely.
That.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it still has that, like, that cult following where it's continuing to be discovered, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yes. In fact, earlier this year, it was last year, I actually finally saw UHF shirts being available, albeit through FrightRags.com, but it was amazing to see that there was actually a licensed merchandise for this movie.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Very cool. Very cool. Any final thoughts, Jamie, on UHF as we wrap up here?
What can I say? It is a maelstrom of the 80s.
Well, you
good description for it—a maelstrom of the 80s.
I mean, like, you've got so many things that happened in the decade just turned into this. Into this guacamole that was made in the Cuisinart that is Weird Al's mind.
I like that. Very nice. Yeah, very nice. Very cool. Brian, what about you?
My final thoughts are honestly that this movie, I think, deserves another look. If you've kind of been like, well, you know, I heard about that Weird Al film and I've never really seen it, which there's really no excuse to not see this. I think you just kind of have to go in knowing that it is absolutely 100% a Weird Al movie,
yeah,
in that vein. So, but as I said, there are moments in this that clearly they're going to stick with you. Like, you know, we didn't really talk about, but Stanley Spadowski's obsession with his mop is hilarious.
Hysterical.
And hysterical.
It only rivals the obsession of the mop with the Toxic Avenger.
Yes. That is exactly what I was going to think of, is Toxie's mop. But,
don't you guys remember when Perry Saturn in wrestling was fucking a mop?
No, I don't. Because
wrestling.
Yay. There's your wrestling.
You got one in. You had to get one in, you son of a bitch. But the point is that this movie, I think it's a good comedic try by Weird Al. I think it's a victim of circumstance. I think it's a victim of, you know, opening at a time when there were other movies that were playing that were way bigger and going to attract more eyeballs.
And to an extent, it was an idea that, oh, we're going to give this one oversized personality a movie.
Yeah.
For certain movies, it works. Like Elvira having her own movie, that worked. But giving Carrot Top his own movie doesn't work.
Oh, come on. Chairman of the Board's awesome.
They misspelled board, though. It should have been B-O-R-E-D.
Yeah.
And that's the exact same joke that was made by Norm MacDonald.
Oh, course. Really?
That's funny, John.
But I also think it's kind of in the same vein as, like, giving Tom Green a movie. You know, like, well, look what he did with MTV and his show.
Red hot for the moment. So
kids like him.
Yeah. Which Freddy got fingered. Oh, my God. What the hell?
We did a whole episode talking about the classic Frederick got fingered.
Frederick.
Well, actually, if you're willing to allow me to talk about Neo-Trash for a second, one of the things that we do, because in a different life, I do original mashups under my DJ persona, Jamie Derelict, and what we'll do is we will make make videos based on these songs, and usually we'll have one movie that we'll cut together. And for a song that that is equal parts Eminem and EMF, we actually have had a video that was cut together from imagery of Freddy Got Fingered.
That's awesome.
I'll send you the video for that, Brian. You'll like that.
Awesome. Well, speaking of Neo Trash video, do you have any events coming up? I know we're in the middle of quarantine and it's kind of crazy, but is Neo Trash still doing things?
Well, we're trying to keep our muscles flexed during this time of quarantine. What we're actually doing is on May 30th. It's a Saturday. We've been for the past couple months doing a double feature each month, and what we're doing is we're taking movies we love and doing them in what we call information, where we'll watch them ahead of time and we'll add up little pop up informational notes as the movie goes on, kind of like pop up video, only not trademarked.
Smart idea.
So we're going to be doing this. If you go to Neo Trash on Neo Trash Video on Facebook, you can get the link to our event there. We're going to be doing it through watchtogether.com. What we're going to be showing is Night of the Creeps, featuring Pittsburgh's own Tom Atkins. The previously mentioned Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Nice.
Very cool.
Very cool.
So yeah, you're going to be getting all sorts of information that you would not expect to get from these lovely movies.
Awesome.
That's May 30th on Facebook.
Watchtogether.com.
That's right.
Yes, I'll give you the link so that you can put it out to your lovely audience.
Yes, we definitely will.
To Psychos Nation.
Psychos Nation.
Yep.
Wonderful.
Awesome. Well, I
can give you one more psycho laugh if you want that. Let's do a Crypt Keeper style.
That's terrifying.
Not too shabby.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Hey, feel free,
guys.
You can feel free to cut that out and use that whenever you want to.
We might do that. It's been a pleasure having you on, Jamie.
It is my pleasure. I'm glad you guys asked me. This is always it's always my honor to be able to talk shop with fellow geeks.
Yeah, and we love having fellow geeks on as well. And what better movie to talk about than UHF? So definitely check out Neo Trash Video on Facebook. And do you have a website as well, or is it just Facebook?
I believe we have neotrashvideo.net. Pretty much the Facebook page is our mothership.
Awesome.
That's where we put the majority of our items up.
Awesome. Well, we'll definitely link to that, and as well as the event on the 30th with Tom Atkins and Night of the Creeps and Killer Clowns.
I will say one of my favorite things to do as part of Neo Trash is I love to meet up with little do little celebrity meetups, and I think we'll probably have a special thing from Mr. Tom Atkins before the movie. So
very cool, very cool. Well, that's awesome. John, where can they find you at on the Twitter machine?
The Unreal J Wolves.
Lane?
LA_Croft.
And you can find me at Brian Connington. I'm also on the Psycho Show page. Be sure to like us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Psycho Show. You can also find us on the Epicast Network at epicastnetwork.com. If you have a favorite movie or question you want to throw away, or you too are planning on opening a UHF station in 2020.
Yes, do it.
You can contact us.
Pirates of the world, unite and take over.
That's right. You can contact us at cinemapsychoshow.com. Make sure to subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, and we will see you next time.
Bad Hair Day is Weird Al's best album. Don't at me.
Epicast.